welcome to A Conversation With. My name is Shelley Hessian. I'm the Manager of Incubation and Entrepreneurial Programs at InnovaCorp, and we're pleased to have you here today. Our topic is on human resources, and we've got a great panel assembled, and I will do the introductions. So closest to me is Jennifer Robichaud. Jennifer is the Vice President Corporate Resource Development at InnovaCorp. She's got a Bachelor's Science degree with a major in psychology from Mount St. Vincent University and an Advanced Diploma in Human Resources from the Nova Scotia Community College. Since 2000, Jennifer has been a certified human resources professional, and Jennifer joined InnovaCorp in 2009, bringing over 13 years of regional and global human resource management experience. And part of those 13 years, she was at BMO Financial Group, Flagstone Reassurance, and ExxonMobil Canada. So welcome, Jennifer. So next to Jennifer is Mather Karskalin. Did I pronounce it right? Good. So Mather is the founder and CEO of SaberTech. And SaberTech was our winner of the Nova Scotia Clean Tech Open. And he was recently a finalist in the Bioport Challenge, which was held the last week of September. And we'll learn more about his company when he talks. But I will mention that Mather is a scientist, an entrepreneur, and computational ecology PhD student at Dalhousie University, and he was employed as an agal cultivation technician at National Research Council Canada for nearly 4 years before he left his post to chase his dream of creating algae-based bioproducts. So next to him is Saeed, and how do you pronounce your last name? Al-Dahari.
You got it.
Got it. So, Saeed is the president and CEO of SimplyCast. He has an MBA and a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science. Also has a Certificate of Human Resource Management. Saeed has over 10 years of experience in the IT industry, and he recently attended 48 Hours in the Valley after SimplyCast was selected as one of Canada's most promising startups by C100. Saeed is very active in the ICT community, and he's currently on the board of directors of Digital Nova Scotia. So welcome.
Thank you.
So we've got a great panel. It's Q&A, so at any point, if you guys have any questions, just raise your hand. I'll probably repeat the question because we're actually recording this to do a podcast on our website. So I will start. So I'll start with the gentleman here. Saeed, tell us about your company, and then we'll get Mather to talk about his company.
All right. SimplyCast is a multi-channel marketing platform. In pretty straightforward terms, we basically help you communicate with your clients using your preferred mode of communication. What we've done over the last 3 years is we saw an opportunity where a business is struggling to basically communicate with their clients using all these new channels that are constantly popping up. Traditional channels like phone, fax, email, and so on and so forth, and today YouTube, Twitter, and you name it. And there's potentially about 50 or 60 channels up there. So we decided to create a multi-channel or a single platform to allow you to communicate rather than dealing with 15 different vendors. And at the same time, eliminating the whole concept of duplication using those multiple channels. So we today operate in about 175 countries. We started as a startup actually right here in, at the TIC with about 3 employees, and today we have about 20 employees. Thank you.
Mather?
So we go small, pretty much. We're an algal biofuels company. Algae's pretty much swooped into the science scene over the past 5 to 7 years with the need for renewable fuels, kind of catching the headlines. And as opposed to refining all the processes that have been continuously being used for the past decade or so, we've kind of reinvented the wheel, if you will, in hopes of actually creating a cost-effective way to mass-produce algae. Our focus is on producing enough algae to fuel the biofuels industry for the aviation world. Our aim is global. However, Canada has now jumped on board the biofuels initiative. So we've sort of taken a slight turn, and our primary focus right now in the short term is to provide enough algal biomass for the Canadian aviation industry. Small team of 3 full-time and 4, possibly 5 part-time students right now. And we're also looking to start up a Dalhousie lab as well to get a bunch of undergraduates on board the program.
Perfect. Jennifer, I'll get you to tell us about your HR role and the services you provide to clients.
Okay. So the services that I provide to clients runs the gamut from an HR perspective. I've had discussions with a number of clients on how to hire, how to fire, how to properly manage employees, simple things like creating offer letters, sitting down and setting up performance management documents. And then generally providing assistance from a policy and a policy perspective.
Okay, perfect. Now, the whole topic of HR, people say staff are your most important resource. So is that true or is it hokey? What do you guys think?
They're your life force, really. I mean, especially, I think I was a little bit naive in assuming that when we got going, I would spend every day in the lab managing everything, but, you have to run around, and while you're out, you need to know that your staff are doing what they're supposed to be doing in a timely, a functional way. So they're the heart and soul of the lab just as much as the founders and the entire management team.
Yeah, so, I mean, you probably hear a lot of companies say, focus on your customer first. That's simply because we actually focus on our employees first. Happy employees, happy customers, that's the way we see it. As they say, happy wife, happy life. So we use that same model. Our employees, we don't usually call them employees, we call them our coworkers. We're all pretty much the same within our organization. We try to pretty much, take out the title as a whole within SimpliCast, so no one has a title. Or whatever perks that I receive, they receive, and so on and so forth. So this way, we pretty much have it as equal partners within the organization. Everyone owns the responsibilities and their faults as well when they actually make a mistake. So employees are pretty much the most important asset within our company, and should be the same within any company, because if your employees are not happy, chances are they'll probably pass that unhappiness onto your clients, which eventually will probably destroy your business.
And from a venture capital perspective, I would say that we would rather invest in an A team with a B idea than a B team with an A idea. And that's one of the things. We invest in the team. That's one of the most important pieces of information when we're looking at whether or not we're going to invest in a company. It's how effective is the team when they're working together. And this didn't go over very well in Invest Atlantic, but I used an analogy with how important a team is. And I compared a team to the Navy SEALs. And so the Navy SEALs have a saying that says individuals play the game, but teams beat the odds, and that just underlines the importance of having an effective team.
So, who does the HR and your company? So I'm assuming.
So when I started at SimpliCast, I pretty much did everything HR related, job descriptions, wages and salaries, performance evaluations, you name it. And it helped that I took 30 plus courses at the university. And basically the way we've done it is I take pretty much every employee within the organization, and they join me at the interview process. They actually help me write the job descriptions. For example, 2 of our junior employees are actually going out tomorrow to interview people, students at Dallas University in St. Mary's. So, I run them for about an hour and a half of what they should do, what questions they can ask, making sure that they follow as much as possible the process. And they said, "Hey, we've never done this before." And I said, "That's the whole point. Because, when you guys grow within the organization as managers, I need to make sure that you, hire the right people." And they said, "Well, what if we make a mistake?" And I said, "Well, that's the whole point. We need to hire students within the organization. We hire about 15 to 20 students a year compared to other organizations, even though we're small." and I said, "Make the mistake. they hire them, because we're actually helping those students gain employment. The thing is, if they don't do a good job, they're not going to be hired full-time when it's going forward, and we have that limited amount of time. They're going to learn from your experience what you have not seen, because, you know, making that mistake and hiring that individual is you know, it does cost the organization, but it's actually an investment in someone that's within our community, and that's the way I see it. And the more people that we help, the better it is for all of us. So HR is not something that should be at the top, and we practice this day one, right, within the organization. Everyone within our organization knows how to interview. Not everybody makes 100% the hiring decision, but it's okay, because with limited terms of, you know, 3 to 4 months or even an 8 month term with an MBA that we've hired as well, which turned out very, very good. So far we have not had any bad hires within the organization. We've had so-so, but guess what? At the end of the day, it actually helped the community, and those people actually became, you know, were 100% employed once they left SimpliCast because of the rigorous training that we put them through.
So who does the HR in your spot matter?
It's kind of weird for us, because we're a small group in the beginning, and each person doesn't have a specific job, so we're not going out looking for an engineer or just a biologist. It's more so looking for people that are, biggest they sort of touch upon, are people that are willing to learn and sort of grow inside the work environment. So for us, it's more of a kind of a casual team decision. You know, if the project is in need of additional just hands or a certain type of expertise, then as a group, we sort of pick and choose among people that we know. That's one thing that we've really been lucky about, is sort of having a lot of ties into Dalhousie and just the local sort of community in Nova Scotia. So we haven't really need to go out and post job descriptions and interviews. We can kind of choose personal
hidden job market.
Yeah, there you go.
So the people working for you have to have like a very specific skill set?
No, they don't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I don't know anything about bioalgae.
It's funny, I mean, I took no algae courses in my undergraduate. I think our postdoc, he's a microbiologist by trade, so he's probably the most highly qualified microbiologist that we have. But for us, it's mainly if we like you. I mean, it's kind of odd. I started trusting my gut a lot more, and it's done well. I mean, literally within the first 10, 15 seconds, even if you're a wonderful person and your resume is shining, if my gut doesn't say, yeah, I want to spend, you know, 100 hours a week with this person, typically it's not a good fit. So for us, yeah, it's just kind of, you need to be kind of a little of an odd cookie, if you will. You need to be willing to take on any challenge in the company.
One thing to add to the process that we've developed internally is the person that hires that individual within the organization is the person that brings them in, but the team gets them up.
Yeah.
Right. So we have a voting process, almost like Survivor at the end of the term, where the team either has to say yes or no if that person stays, regardless of if I hire the person or not. Right. So they're saying, you're not going to be offended if we say no to them. This person has to work with you guys.
Yeah.
You have to decide.
Yeah.
And it's important, I think, to ensure that you have a process that you follow when you do interview folks. But Mather's right. That gut feeling that you get on whether or not you're actually going to be able to work with that person is something that I would certainly take into account as well. And again, I come from a more process-oriented perspective, but that gut feeling, that gut check that everybody does when they're interviewing folks and saying, you know, how do I see this person fitting in, is very important to listen to. And I'm really excited to have these two folks on the panel with me, because these folks actually hire students. And my kind of pitch for today is, for those folks who are looking for individuals, the post-secondary institutions within Nova Scotia, bar none, have some fantastic folks within the ecosystem, the university and community college ecosystem. And I would certainly encourage folks who are looking for individuals to take a look at Dal, at St. Mary's, at the community college, because I think you'll be pleasantly surprised on the quality and caliber of students that you come into contact with. the benefit as well to hiring a student is around the fact that generally speaking, they don't have any other companies that have it, and you get to train them how you want them to be trained. And so that's a huge benefit, particularly when you're working in a startup.
Okay, let's throw that back to Saeed and Mather, because you actually set up a scholarship, Saeed, haven't you? Do you want to talk about that and kind of your involvement in the whole student community, and then we'll...
We don't actually post positions on like CareerBeacon and all these job sites. We post them on our website. Also, the process that we have is we don't actually take the posting off, so we're constantly looking for people, even though we don't have a position that's available for that individual, but that individual actually fits the culture, fits the overall strategy of the company. We actually hire them even though we don't have a position for them, because it's hard to find those individuals that can fit within the organization. We've created basically 3 scholarships, and just recently we actually gave out 6, and we doubled the scholarships this year. We're hoping to do the same, maybe double it again going forward, but again, it all depends on the caliber of individuals that are coming through, and it's through a company, local company called Equal 6 that basically supports us to push these things forward. And the scholarships were pretty named after 3 people that I've actually had a great impact on my life, Mr. Bill Ritchie, our chairman, Dr. Don Jutla, professor at St. Mary's University, and Dr. Porter Scobie, computer science professor at SMU as well. And basically, I don't actually get to choose the individuals. What we do is once we get the shortlist, I actually pass them on to the three individuals that I've named the scholarship after, and basically ask them to choose from the shortlist of who to give the scholarship to. So I'm not actually involved in giving any of the money out whatsoever. I'm not involved in the selection process. We get the Equal 6 to give us a short list based on our criteria and get the individuals to choose. What we're doing here is I've always had this thought, even at a young age, is that if you don't invest in your community, you're not investing in yourself, because the more that you create for the community, the better it is for all of us. I have kids at home, and I want them to stay in Nova Scotia and be employed here. So I'm trying to change things, even though it will take a while to do, but try to set a model that shows that we can bring individuals. We're also looking for seasoned veterans as well. A director partnership that we're hiring basically November 1st that has a lot of experience. We're looking for a VP of marketing, a VP of business development, and we're looking to open offices in other regions in the future as well. So, but the student concept is, and the reason why we don't post positions is we're actually trying to create our own supply. And I said this probably 7 years ago, even in my performance evaluation at InnovaCorp, and you can look it up. 7 years ago, I said there's going to be the time, which is, I basically said this between this year and next year, there's going to be a tech crunch of talent. And I was actually trying to help, influence InnovaCorp internally to find ways to, get some of those programs to be implemented before this happens. And I've been on a number of, federal government initiatives through Digital Nova Scotia, and they're saying the actual private report is 2016 is the year where basically demand will outstrip supply, and each individual will have 2 to 3 positions and offers. So what we're doing is we're creating the supply. So I hire, potentially 5 or 10 in first year. By the time they graduate, what do you think, where do they want to work? Right? And they all want to come back. So we're constantly creating our supply. Even though, there's a huge investment, we invest close to about $100,000 to $150,000 a year in all these, programs for the company. Technically, those could go to the shareholders if you think about it. But if the company grows fast enough, that could kill us if we don't have the right people. So in January, we're hiring 3 people that have gone through 3 co-op programs through us. The other thing that we also do is once you go through 1 or 2 co-ops through our company, we ask you not to do the 3rd one. And we beg you not to do the 3rd one so you can actually have a chance to look at another company. So, just in case that we don't hire you, that you have a chance to go elsewhere. And people actually refuse to go somewhere else. So that speaks not so much to the culture that we have, but the type of people and the learning. We also put people through a boot camp process to help them learn. So by the time you leave SimplyCast, and we came up with a motto, join SimplyCast for a year and we'll make you a guru. Because 3 years at SimplyCast is pretty much about 10 years somewhere else because of the fast-paced work that we do and the amount of work that's done. It's pretty much where what Silicon Valley does and Google's and the Facebook's and so on. And we've been successful at it, but again, it wasn't just what I've done. It's really the whole organization and how they've adopted the overall culture.
So Matthew, you've got a lot of interaction with students. too, don't you?
Yeah, well, I am a student.
Yeah.
So. You're offering a job?
Sure.
Give you some funding. I think honestly just getting your hands dirty with students is the key. I like how you were saying that your 3 years with you is like 10 years with somebody else, because that's actually something that will attract other students that don't know about you to you, in that it's an exciting place to work, and realistically, students get bored really fast. I mean, if you take any student that works at any government position, chances are after a co-op term of it, they're going to have had enough. You know, the 9-to-5 is great, it's secure, but I mean, this is kind of a chaotic point in every student's life, and I think it's supposed to be. It's exciting. It's how you learn and really kind of find where you're supposed to fall into place. So, actually taking that proactive step to get out there to the universities and say, sort of as Saeed has done, you know, we may not have a position open, but we're always looking for people. I mean, if students are writing you saying, you know, I'm Joe Blow, I'm looking for a job, go in and sit down and have a cup of coffee with them, because in 6 months or in 12 months on his next co-op term, if you do then need a student, you've already created that foundation with that student, you've done some background, and if they come back again, that's sort of a reassurance that they actually really do want to work with you, and they're not just kind of pinched for money and are digging at the bottom of a bag somewhere desperately.
Now, Jennifer, for companies looking to recruit, what are the best tools or methods to use, like newspaper, LinkedIn, kind of, what are the ABCs that people should know?
Okay, so the Chronicle Herald is going to kill me. The Globe and Mail is going to kill me. I wouldn't go the traditional route of newspapers. And again, I would say social media is probably where it's at. So LinkedIn, heck, when we were looking for our CEO, we actually put it on our Twitter page. And it went out. People started to retweet it. And it went out all across the world. And we were able to get quite a large representative of the global community in response to that. So I would certainly say social media is where it's at. And again, focusing on the universities. Again, as I said, I'm a big fan of the quality and caliber of the students there.
And what do you guys, so you guys are mostly social media? Do you use any other methods?
Right now, basically what we do is I do a roadshow once a year, where I actually go talk to students in their classes, or, you know, if there's a career fair of some sort. We don't like to get involved in where people are constantly looking for work. We want to spread the word on the culture first, how what we do, and then people almost self-select. We also, you know, use certain techniques and how we communicate, where you have to apply and talk to someone within the organization, you know, call in, try the application, test, you know, come back with something that's going to be useful to us. So social media, we push a little bit out there, but believe it or not, we haven't been actively, you know, spreading the word on what we're looking for, because we want to actually be face-to-face with the individuals. So what we're going to be doing this year is I'm actually, we've hired, you know, a new office manager, because it's getting, you know, to the point where we need to take a little bit off of everyone's plate from a recruitment perspective. So that office manager now basically will book time in specific classes within the university. So we're going to go to every computer science class in Halifax, all the way up to Cape Breton to Dalhousie, St. Mary's. We're going to go to every marketing class as well, and basically once a year do this, so we can talk about what we do within the organization and let people basically self-select themselves if they can fit. And then the other thing that we do is we allow our employees to recommend people. And we take the recommendations for face value. We don't actually go through a very rigorous process when they make the recommendation. We hire them because they said hire them. And then they come back and say, well, tight, I made a mistake, we should let them go. Right? Or, no, here's the way I do it. So we don't actually get tons of resumes from internals, but when we get one, it's usually, you know, very solid. So now the organization, you know, pretty much everyone within the organization has one title, and that title is their growth agent. A growth agent by recruitment. We also included in our performance evaluation. There's two pillars within our company, which I've created 10 pillars for the company. It is happy employees and basically recruitment and growth. And you have to basically satisfy that pillar every year. Have you kept your next door neighbor's space clean? Have you, you know, talked to them? Have you spent some time within the office to, you know, help them out if they have a problem. And at the same time, have you actually given out your card to someone that you think would be a good fit with our company? So that becomes really the culture and the pillar that you're evaluated on at the end of the year, rather than you're evaluated on how well you've done in the company. We actually evaluate you if you've actually attracted good people to our organization. So it's a different way. We've kind of flipped the whole model on its head.
Now, Jennifer, you were going to say something, weren't you?
I was. I mean, I've even gone out through the years as I've been looking for folks. I might be at the mall, I might be at the supermarket, and I might meet a fantastic individual who's really upbeat, has really great customer service, and is working as a cashier or a support worker. And I've actually given those individuals my cards. So I would certainly suggest as well to always have a supply of cards with you, because you never know when you're going to run into a potentially fantastic employee.
Can I ask?
You go right ahead.
I think that's a really important comment. It's kind of funny because we raid Pets Unlimited a lot for just a lot of their aquarium supplies and things like this. And I have begged one of their workers there to come work for me. He has a year of art school training and about 12 years of working with aquariums. And I asked him, I was like, will you ever leave Pets Unlimited? He said, no. It is his dream job to work there. And I have never met a more competent aquatic ecologist in all of my life with no training. And it's all applied training. It's perfect for what you actually need in the research world. So yeah, really don't, I guess it's that saying, don't judge a book by its cover. But essentially, yeah, keep your eyes open, because there's a lot of random, very interesting and amazing people out there.
At InnovaCorp, we always say the first few hires a company makes is very important. So I'll get Jennifer to kind of talk about why that's true and what companies should think about when they're doing the first. So you could be the sole owner, you know, one or two people, but after that, I'll pass it over to you.
So it goes back to, again, the analogy from the Navy SEALs. You know, individuals play the game, but teams beat the odds. And when you're a startup and you're looking for your co-founders, it's very important to not just look at the caliber of the individual, so what experience and skills do the individuals bring in, but how well you're going to work with them and how well they're going to work with you. I think Saeed and Mather said, you know, you need to be really conscious of that, because you're going to spend a lot of your time with that individual. And, you know, going through and making sure that, I always say titles don't matter, but you do need to have a really great understanding of who's responsible for what. And again, going back to my analogy with the Navy SEALs, one of the benefits of them, there's someone always is in charge. So they're the individual that's directing. There's a team of individuals. Each individual has a job. If one of the individuals, for whatever reason, drops out, the team comes in and knows what that individual was doing so that they can cover. And when they're getting out of trouble, they pick the team member up and they never leave anybody behind. So that's the importance of a team, particularly from a startup perspective.
Any questions? I've kind of been hogging the stage here. Anytime you have any questions, kind of put your hand up. Okay, Debbie?
Any suggestions when you're looking at recruiting salespeople in particular?
Okay, question on salespeople.
And what's the, that depends on the industry.
Anything from telecommunications to perhaps teaching. I think
it all, you see, in Halifax or Nova Scotia, it's a bit difficult, and it depends on the product. So if you're trying to sell a high-end tech product, there's not many people that have the experience to actually sell that specific product. However, if you were looking for common denominators, who to hire to actually train and to bring them to that next level, we pretty much look for, you know, specific characteristics where an individual basically likes to, that area. area of the product that they're going to be part of, even though they've never actually sold something of it. You know, if you're selling Simply Gospel, if you actually work in some sort of marketing or you use computer software, at least the learning curve is not going to be as high. The second thing, well, depending on the position, if you're going to be doing a lot of cold calling compared to, you know, a specific lead generation where the leads are there for you, then you need a different type of person compared to, you know, you need more of a closer rather than a warmer of a lead, right? Because I want to sell you on SimplyCast today. The first thing that I have to tell you is to tell you how the product is going to actually benefit you. Right away, you're putting up the sales block going, this guy's trying to sell me a product. So you have to find a way to create that bit of a relationship. So for that type of product, you need a person that, you know, shake hands. Like Solan is a guy that, you know, no matter where I look on Facebook, he's at every event. He's a guy that, you know, he's always talking to people. He's doing his thing. He's business development. He's the type of guy that's, you know, doing his part. So. You know what I mean? There we go. So that's the type of person that you want. And, you know, HR Pros has a very good process where he's the person that brings the business and Tanya is the person that closes the business, right? So, you know, it all depends on the product. If anybody tells you there's just one set of rules that you got to apply for salespeople, it becomes difficult. And there's professionals out there that could help you. But at the end of the day, you need somebody that has that, you know, that what I call the fire in their belly. And that has no fear like Sylvain, just, you know, gets up and, you know, puts out his credit card. So that's the type of person that you need.
And very difficult to find.
I don't think it's difficult to find good salespeople. What's difficult is that we don't want to take the time to train them. We want people just to come in and, you know, run. And in most cases, you can't do that. You know, we have a very rigorous training process internally that works very well. And what I've done internally at SimplyCast, so I've taken everything that a salesperson needs to do down to 90% of it, the system automates now. And the only thing they need to do is talk to the client and close them. So there's things that can be done. The problem is if you haven't done it or you don't know enough of knowledge to utilize technology to help you do what you could do in a most efficient possible way, then you're just looking for people to solve your problem and pass them on to someone else. And then when they don't perform, they're self-selecting. They leave to go somewhere else, and you have that high churn rate. You know, for example, I'll give you just a quick example. We've hired somebody that's starting November 1st. I've already warmed 40 leads for this person. They're major leads. We already signed contracts, and I'm waiting for her to come on board, for her to take the 40 and close them. Right? So when she comes in, she goes, I have 40 that I already can close. So the confidence level is much higher. But what what I've seen in my past experience is, okay, we need a salesperson, let's hire them. So what's the process you created? Oh, what's my target market you created? And so on and so forth. And then the person is basically sitting there for 6 months trying to collect and learn rather than actually hit the ground running. So what we've done is we've created pretty much a stack of every process that the person needs to do, documented every part of our software, documented every part of our training manual, and then that person starts for the first week. I'm going to basically lock her in a room, and she's going to read everything from start to finish, and then we put them through a specialized training program that I've created, which is based on the Sandler program as well, and then I go, you know, basically 3 days straight with them, and then within 2 weeks, they hit the ground running, and they start tweaking the process to what they think they could do, because our process is not perfect. The process is just a starting point for them to adopt to what they could do. Because I sell differently than Sylvain sells, and then Shelly sells us on.
So that's a good question. That's a good question, because a lot of times our companies need salespeople, and I've seen the problem where they're hired a marketing person who does it. Not very good at sales. Any comments on that, Jennifer?
Again, I think you hit the nail on the head, though, Shelley. Sales is different than marketing. And, you know, again, depending on how important experience is for the sales role, I would go out to any of the events that you may attend and start talking to people. Because one of the key kind of success metrics that I would look at is how does the individual sell him or herself when he meets you. So that would be something that I would look at. But again, it depends on how important experience is. Really great salespeople are in very high demand. And so going back and looking at potentially training an individual in your processes and your procedures and all of your target market, I think has a lot of benefit because they're selling your product and they don't have any other preconceived notions.
Can you wait?
Yeah, on that idea of experience, how do you deal with some of this dichotomy here? You have somebody that comes forward, resume or interest seems to be great, they got 12 years of relevant experience, but is it really 12 years of experience or 1 year of experience just experience 12 times?
Could be. Yeah, no, I think we don't actually look at the years of experience. So I've met a gentleman recently, and he worked with one of the three top tech companies in Canada, U.S. Part of what we do in our process is whatever your title was before you joined SimplyCast, we're going to actually demote you to basically three titles now, and then you have to work your way up. So leave the ego at the door, and most people actually leave and say, what is this guy saying here? I'm going to go back to a manager now, and then I have to work my way up, and that's the way it works within the organization, because if you don't check your ego at the door, then you're pretty much using your past experiences in a big corporation compared to a startup. A startup is a place where you have to be the doer, not that you have to wait to hire three people underneath you to actually get the work done because the company doesn't have enough money. And when Jennifer was saying earlier, we rather invest in an A team rather than a B team, it's not because I'm in the venture, and I used to be a venture capitalist for 5 years at an old corp as well. It's not because that's what we want to do, because the money will run out if you hire the wrong person, and nobody will fund you again, because we're looking for the metrics and the milestones for you to meet. And if you didn't hire the right people initially, you're going to lose half your company because your valuation is going to go down. So it's a motherhood statement that everybody agrees on, but it's the companies don't have enough money, and everybody's looking to raise capital. We're looking to raise capital because that growth requires that funding. So back to the 12 years experience. Experience basically to us allows you not to make the same mistakes again. From a startup, that's a very good thing. Even if it's 1 year, doing it 12 times, hopefully you're not making 12 times the mistakes that if I hire somebody brand new from an enterprise type client. So, and that's what we do within our organization. Most of our customers are small businesses around the world. So when we hire young or even, we have people, older people, if you want to talk about old, and young, we don't discriminate against age or sex and all that. We're an equal opportunity employer at the end of the day. But the way we see it is that it's, can they make an impact for us? That's really what we hire on. Can you make an impact? You could be an English major with 12 years experience writing, but you're going to be a great blogger once we teach you about the marketing area. So that's the way we look at it, is can you make an impact regardless of how many years you have in experience within the organization. Especially, there's not many companies like us in this province, so it will be hard to find someone that has 12 years experience in the space that we're in.
So we've got about 5 to 10 minutes left. So we haven't talked about contract employees. So we've been talking about hiring full-time, but what about kind of HR contract? I know some companies hire contract CFOs, chief financial officers. Kind of, Jennifer, your thoughts on that?
Well, I come from a startup perspective, and again, when you are a founder, you can't be everything all the time. And so going out and finding, from a contract perspective, somebody who has an extreme amount of financial knowledge, if you don't have it, that's something that's important for your organization. And to go out and find that individual, I think it's worthwhile to do that. But I think first and foremost, as the founder of a company, you need to be very self-aware of what your strengths are and what your areas for development are. And that's something that sometimes I would say is difficult for individuals as founders of companies, because it requires you to look internally within yourself. And folks generally don't like to identify what their weaknesses are. But from a startup perspective, you're going to need someone who can sell. you're going to need someone who has the knowledge from a finance perspective. Depending what your company does, you may need a technical individual. And then, you know, most importantly is, you know, the ability to manage and to guide all of those processes that come with it. You don't have to be an expert in anything, in everything, but you need to have that knowledge of where you need help. So that's where contract employees come in.
Mather, do you have any contract employees?
I can address it with kind of like a general comment. A lot of people kind of get hung up on the fact that startups don't have a lot of money. So you think, you know, I can't afford a CFO who's going to want $100,000 a year. But you'd actually be surprised how many people, and I mean across Canada and even into the States, from our experience, have been willing to do things not only sort of pro bono, but, you know, defer payments or just slash down the payments a lot because they understand, you know, they've either reached a point in their career where they're not looking to make, you know, $100,000, $200,000 a year. They're willing to do it because they're interested and they love doing it. So I think it's a great idea, and I think that what Jennifer said about knowing your weaknesses is critical, because if it runs into you saying leave your ego at the door, if you come in thinking you're a hotshot and you can do everything, you just get bogged down, and it is tough. I mean, waking up realizing, you know, holy crap, I actually don't understand anything about this and I just made a mistake is, I think, in a startup's worst nightmare. And I mean, it happens. I think it's just part of the growing.
Yeah, a simple rule is if it's core, keep it inside. Non-core, let somebody else do it. You don't have that luxury when you start as a small business and, you know, as a startup, or let's call it pre-revenue, because startup is could have revenue or no revenue. If you're pre-revenue, you just raise some capital. You have to kind of pretty much pinch every penny and every dollar, and so you can extend your runway. You know, at our company, we raised $750,000. That was 3 years ago, and we've never raised any capital since then. You look at companies today, they're raising $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million, and they're running out of money in the first year. Well, you know, you have to be cognizant of what you do, and you have to get the company to a specific point where you can raise the next round of financing, meet some milestones. But from a core to non-core, early days, you should probably pretty much contract everything. Always take care, if you're in a startup or a pre-revenue company, the intellectual property is covered. What we'd like to do, even if it's non-core, like for example, HR is core to how we operate, what we do. We've learned it. We know everything about what we need to do within our company. Now what we're doing is we're hiring HR pros to basically vet the whole process for us and tell us, Saeed, you know, you suck here, you suck here, you suck here. Let's help you do this, this, and this, and let's go from there. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we want to become the best organization in the world. And just because we think that we know what we're doing HR-wise, and, you know, we have a 98% retention rate within our company, I want to get to 100%. Okay? But the question is, could we get there? Well, that's why we're hiring the pros to help us.
Couple of questions. We're almost at our time. So we'll go across the board. If you're hiring somebody, kind of what are the top three things you look for? Kind of skills, or could be whatever. So I'll start with Jennifer.
So the skills and the experience you'll see on the resume, generally speaking, I wouldn't focus a whole lot on tell me, you know, about your time at this company and what you did. It's all on the resume. So what I would focus on is actually specific examples. So you say here that you're a team player, so tell me your best team player story. One of the other things that we've started to do now is we've actually gone beyond the traditional interview role. So as an example, we were looking for a student in residence, a student entrepreneur in residence. And so instead of interviewing the individual, we actually had the individuals come in and do investment pitches for us. We've had folks, we've brought them in, and we've actually given them a case study in the middle of the interview. So kind of you have 15 minutes to read and answer three or four questions, and then we want you to come back and kind of walk us through the process and kind of what was your thinking as you were going through and responding to the questions. And that actually provides us with some concrete information on how the individual is going to respond in similar situations. So those would be some of the things that I would start with.
Okay. So what are the top three things that you would look for?
I think the enthusiasm is really the top one. I would do kind of like a pre-screening. I'll have coffee with somebody just really quickly, 15, 20 minutes to get that gut feeling out of the way. And I always make a point to comment on how I like being heckled. You know, if you don't hear from me and I've said I'd get back to you in 3 days, fire me an email, because that really shows that they're kind of, they'll go above and beyond what most of their friends and colleagues will do in order to get that job. And then I really try not to pay attention to resume or marks especially. I won't even get into how I hate marks, but I find it just, students, you're going to, you want to work with them. And whether they got a B in a class or an A in a class is really irrelevant. So it's just that drive and that enthusiasm. And I mean, you can see it. When you're talking to somebody, you can really tell if their face is lighting up when you're telling them about the job and the position that's there. I mean, you know if they're actually interested in doing it. So, yeah.
Yeah, for us, we pretty much take everything that I've been taught in HR from the best university in the world, St. Mary's University. Basically, wait until after a year to apply those rules. So we apply everything that we've learned in HR once a person has been with us for a year, and we start helping them, work on, the general corporate skills that they need to kind of stay and grow within the organization. But what we really look for is a fanatical passion for the position that they're looking for. It comes out in their resumes, it comes out in their extracurricular activities, it comes out in their volunteer experience, it comes out in all these things, but it's not so much what's in the resume, it's the way they actually sell themselves, like, as Jennifer said earlier. If you can't sell yourself and what you want to do, chances are this is just a paycheck job for you. And no one in our organization is actually in the job at SimplyCast for the paycheck. They tell you this day in, day out. I'm not coming to work. I'm actually coming to my hobby. I wake up in the morning and I'm going, when am I going to, I look at the watch and it's like 5:30. I'm going, when is it going to be 7 so I can get to work, right? Because it's the fun environment. It's a challenging place. I don't see it, as Peter was saying, I see me at Walmart at like 8 o'clock at night. I'm going home because I'm most traveling the next day. I'm trying to get everything in place. So I don't look at the watch and say, when am I going to go home? Once you do that, it becomes a job, right? We look at potentially we get about 10 resumes a day now. Anyways, between 5 to 10 resumes, unsolicited. Basically, people just say, somebody talked about us somewhere, something on a brand new website. And they start coming in and you read right away, I've heard about it because of this, and this is why I applied, because it fits what I'm looking for, not so much because I'm looking for a job. So that's really, marks, for example, we've hired people with F's in certain areas, and guess what? They became an A employee, and they received 5 raises within a year. Hey, great. It happens in organizations. So marks and so on doesn't really matter. What we're looking for is we're looking for people to have the hobby and to actually make SimplyCast their hobby rather than their job. The thing is, it becomes your job over time, and you have experience, and guess what? Someday you'll decide to, start up your own company. I'd like everyone in my organization to start a startup someday.
So. Well, we're at our time. So thank you guys very much. Let's give them a round of applause. So you can tell the topic is vast, and we only kind of skimmed the surface, but we will bring back some more topics and kind of go in depth in certain areas. So if you want to come up and ask any of the speakers questions one-on-one, please do, and we have lots of food at the back. So go back and grab a sandwich, grab a dessert, and you feel free to stay.